Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show 83 of the Mini PC Show. Yes, it's almost Christmas. You got an obligation, Dor. You got to get this out before Christmas. And big talk, small machines, and the best big talker in the house is Dor. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Rich. Well, my goal is to get this show out tonight. Not that I'm positive that's going to happen.
Ooh, you throwing down.
Well, you know, we all have to have something to shoot for. I will say, there isn't really a lot of hardware news, it seems like, this time of year, but I'm still seeing the newsworthy, I'll say, topics. How is everything going with you? You all right there, Rich? Can't hear you.
Oh, I'm pushing the wrong button. Yeah, I'm at the Orlando Outpost and going to the Southern Command tomorrow, and hopefully they'll let us work remote for the next 2 weeks. Because I don't know why they'd want us in the office.
Well, this is the time of year you think if they would let you work remote, it would be, you know, now.
Indeed. I'm a big troll of Costco, and Costco has a deal. If anybody's looking for a 70-inch Vizio TV, smart TV with Chromecast built into it, $750 delivered.
Gotcha. I will say I've been looking at more storage stuff, because I'm swearing this is the year of drives and storage. NVMe drives have came down literally like almost half in the last 3 months.
Wow. Did I talk about what I did with my Mac on the Mini PC Show?
I don't believe so.
So my Mac came with it's a 2012 MacBook Pro Retina 15-inch, and it came with a 256 gig SSD, but it's got an SD card slot, and you can get a SD card adapter that allows you to put, and I got a 256 gig SD card in there sideways, micro SD card that is. So it's flush to the outside. So instead of paying hundreds of dollars for like an SSD upgrade, cracking the box open, violating the warranty, blah, 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 I just slide this thing in. I'm pretty dang happy with that.
Well, I will say, if you get a good micro SD card, you'll get good speeds out of it. You're not going to get crazy speeds out of it, but you will get fair speed out of it. And the fact that it's like flush with the side, to me, I can't put a price tag on how much I value that.
Yeah, the second best thing is like a nub, where it's like a keyboard adapter or mouse adapter nub. And those seem okay, but flush is real nice.
Absolutely. And I think it's almost comical. You got a micro SD card that literally doubles the amount of storage on your full-fledged laptop.
So it was like $40 for the card, and I don't know if it was $10 or $20 for the adapter. Oh, Yingling Lager.
Yes, sir.
What town in Pennsylvania is that from? Have they brewed in a cave? Or what is it?
I know it's
Pottsville, right?
Yes, Pottsville.
I have flown into that airport.
Every time I see that, I think Pottersville from It's a Wonderful Life.
It's actually a neat little town. I didn't do the tour, but I think the cave is like 50 degrees all year round.
Gotcha. The one thing I know is it is the oldest continuous brewery in the United States, aka Prohibition. As soon as Prohibition ended, they started back up again. But they were the one that taught me every like 10 miles further from any brewery, the worse the beer is going to taste. And that's why like Budweiser and Coors never taste good, because they have to literally travel like 1,000 miles, where this stuff only has to travel like 30 miles.
So are you saying when I was in St. Louis, I should have drank Budweiser?
See, any beer made out of rice, I consider to be substandard. You know, they don't use wheat. They haven't used wheat in like 20 years.
Oh, boy. And let's see, was it Pat? Pat on Tilt was talking about brewing beer, and I work with a guy that used to brew, but Pat just brewed a batch.
It's one of those things, I love the idea of it. It's too close to baking. I'm a cook. I like having a pan on a stove where I can throw stuff in and watch it develop, not bake where you have to have exact measurements and then put it in a hole and then ignore it. I can't do that. So whenever I tried to brew beer, it came out horrible.
Well, there are Raspberry Pi solutions for that.
Doesn't matter. I would still want to tinker with it too much. But I do have hardware news, and I would pick it up, but it's running right now. And I will say I did get RAM for my Odroid H2. only got 4 gigs of RAM. It was cheaper than I thought. I want to say it was like $28 for 4 gigs, which is big difference, because if you go for the max 32 gigs, I want to say it was $280.
Yeah. I'd want to go full bore and get the 32 gigs on it.
Well, my logic is I buy 4 gigs of RAM, and then hopefully in like 6 months or 8 months, I'll be able to splurge and go up to, you know, above 16 is my logic. But the best thing I can say about it right now is it's very non-spectacular. It isn't fumbling. It isn't bumbling. It isn't stumbling. It's just running, and it's running stable as hell.
So it's nominal.
It's fair is what I'll say. The dual gig NIC is getting very good throughput. I did actually test that. I am going to probably, the next purchase on it will be an NVMe drive because of they're unbelievably affordable. I'm shocked at how affordable they are. And then like 3D print an actual like functional case for it.
Mm-hmm. So are there case designs out there?
I'm sure there are somewhere. But I think the only one I saw so far was literally gigantic because they expected you to have 2 SATA drives in it.
That's crazy.
Well, it has the 2 SATA ports built onto it. So, I mean, if you want to use it as like a really powerful NAS, I guess it makes sense. I'm not going to use it as a NAS. I'm going to use it as basically a portable computer in the beginning. And then maybe when I grow tired of it, I'll actually put it on the network and use it as a like pfSense type device.
See, that's where I think it would really shine. Now, you say you're using both NICs. What are you doing with the NICs?
No. I'm sorry. I only connected one, did a speed test, disconnected, hooked up the other one in just to see. And I was getting good speeds through both. It was like 800 plus meg.
So the cool thing about devices with dual NICs is you can bond the NICs, but then you need a switch that's managed that you can bond the ports.
Right. Yeah. And to be honest, my internet speeds are not fiber. If it was fiber, I would definitely look at doing that. I don't have fiber, so to me that wasn't really a must have. I will say the other thing I was thinking about was having it basically be the bridge between two networks, but I'm not sure the security in that, because my logic is if I do ever get Amazon Echoes or Google Homes, or I want to connect IoT type stuff, I want it on a completely isolated separate network, but then I think I would need a device to bridge those networks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of like that idea, keeping them separated. Oh, speaking of which, if anybody follows my router hacking, did I post it on Google Plus also? The T-Mobile AC1900 that you can hack into an RT68U with mesh networking is like $39, $39.99.
Yeah, very fair cost on that one.
Where the 68U is still like $169, $179. So, yeah, if you need that, I already have 3, you know, 1 original router and then 2 T-Mobile, so I don't need any more. But that's a super good price.
Very cool. Yeah, I will just say in closing on the H2, in hindsight, if I wasn't planning on getting a really good drive on it, if I wasn't planning on bumping the RAM up near its max, I would have probably done better price-wise by just getting like an Intel NUC, maybe like a last generation Intel NUC. But I do plan on getting like a good NVMe drive on it, and I do plan on getting much more RAM on it. So I think the last time I looked at the NUCs, the max was 16, and that was only the higher end NUC.
So, Dor, a couple of things. Let me address the NUC thing, and you're only telling 10% of the story here, but let me get to the NUC first. So I've actually done a spreadsheet on these things and trying to figure out, is it cheaper going with a mini PC type SBC and then building it up, or is it cheaper to buy an Intel NUC? And I found, because you get a case, a power supply with the NUC, it's cheaper to go with the NUC. It's you're paying many times for these Intel single board computers almost as much as the NUC, but with no case, no power supply.
Oh, well, that doesn't shock me. I have to pay the Intel tax.
Right. The other thing that you're not telling us, one, of course, you bought one of these things and didn't get the rest of us one, so I'm just mad at you. The other thing is they don't produce them anymore.
Well, they stopped producing them, and I have a $400 bill coming in about a month for podnuts.com. So I think I got to prioritize that.
Oh, so the Intel stopped building the chips, the CPUs that the H2 uses. So nobody knows when there's going to be any more of them.
They did. But then if you take a look at line 791, they did have basically like a press conference in the last week, and they did go over the quote unquote future of Intel chips. And really all you got to know is every Intel processor since like the 8086s have been basically two dimensional chips. They've only been building the chips out two ways, not height wise, but length and depth kind of thing. And that's it. What they plan on starting in 2019, but not actually going full throttle until 2020, is literally stacking components on the chip in a three-dimensional way. The only trick is they have figured out, but they have to optimize where they put the hottest things, because the hottest things have to be closer to the heat sink. And
I was going to say heat's an issue, yeah.
But then the less critical parts and the parts that don't get as hot, they're going to be able to stack vertically. So my logic is, when I think of processing power cubic wise, they should then be able to stack and pack a lot of power in the same area footprint. But heat is going to have to be the magic trick. I'm going to guess that's the real reason why this hasn't been done in the past. And apparently they've cracked that magic sequence kind of thing.
I got to talk. My buddy Don actually was an Intel chip designer. And I got to talk to him about that. Intel closed the facility he was in. But I'm guessing the cores got to be close to the heat sink. You probably could put other stuff lower in the chip.
Well, I will say this. After this year and their Spectre and their meltdown and their speculation, this and that, the good news is they really only have one way to go. They've seen a huge loss in sales this year. They've had a huge egg on their face from all these security issues. Hopefully, as a company, they've learned from it. And hopefully, as consumers, we will benefit from it. But I will say, them doing this, them announcing this, is literally going to now again put AMD in a hard place to either keep up or get left behind. They also announced at this same place that their next generation video stack is going to be debuted sometime in 2019, probably not till the end of 2019, and then 2020 go full bore on their like generation 11 graphics, which they do expect to be competitive in running some higher things.
Wow.
Yeah, so this literally could be the beginning of the real competition, because once Intel, I don't want to say gives up on the main processors, but once ARM really starts eating their entire lunch, Intel's going to have to pivot and shift and I think become a different kind of graphics developer. They don't expect to take on the highest of the high-end devices. They don't expect to be able to do, you know, insane 4K, 120 FERPs, this, that. But they do expect to be able to offer fair graphics at a reasonable price. So I think they're going to try to corner the market on the less intensive display graphics.
Huh. I mean, sounds like a good plan.
Well, I mean, you know, IBM, a lot of companies learn from IBM in the sense of you can't let yourself get too old and crusty or else the market's going to leave you behind. I think they're trying to be a little bit proactive here. In this last year, I'm sure they've learned a lot, because with failure comes opportunities to learn, and they've had a lot of failures this year.
Or failures that we found out about this year.
Well, yes, true, because they've actually been like the same failures for, I want to say, 3 or 4 years, and we just figured it out.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. So I've got the HC1 running over here, the Odroid HC1, and basically it's just a Plex server for me at my Orlando compound or outpost, and it hasn't been stable. It dies after some period of time.
That's not good.
Yeah, I did an apt update. Apt upgrade, and it pulled down a new version of Plex, and I tried it and it ran, and before I did the update it didn't run. So hopefully there was something buggy in the Plex, and that was all.
Well, I mean, I'm honestly shocked that it's not stable, because the H1 and the HC1 and HC2 are essentially the same board as the XU4, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you just don't have a display port. You don't have USB 3. You have USB 2 and no display.
Gotcha. And I mean, the XU4 that I've seen has been, what I've ran on it has been really, really stable and secure. So I would think just removing the binaries and the needs for the video stuff would only make it more secure, and for it not to be stable is a little bit shocking.
Well, what I'm talking about being stable is Plex, not necessarily the HC1. So I think it was a Plex issue, but we'll find out. I only did the update like 5 or 6 o'clock today, and I played a few minutes of video.
So did you have to just like restart the Plex service?
Auto restarted.
Okay. Well, then I guess that's not as bad. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, then I feel better. Not great, but I feel better.
Yeah. Other hardware that's currently out may change my mind, but right now my Odroid XU4, Odroid HC1, HC2 is definitely the go-to device. And if you're in the field, if you've cut your teeth on Raspberry Pi zeros and threes and whatever, I'm thinking the Rockchip 64, because it's the 2 gig version is the same price as the Raspberry Pi 3. With 1 gig, and you get 2 USB 3.0 ports on it. So I'm thinking, if you're a more experienced Pi device person, that's a good low-end device for the price.
Gotcha. I'll say my Rock 64 experience has been, I'll say, not perfect, and it's not, I think, a hardware
problem.
That's
Rock Pro, right?
No, the Rock 64. I've had it experience like really good heat on it, I'll say. When I disable the Firefox timeout, where sometimes you'll get the timeout warning that the page is taking too long. Do you want to continue or stop the script? When I disable that prompt and I just say run, I've seen reboots. I've seen black screens. When I tried to run DietPy and load Nextcloud, it never came down correctly. But when I get something on the Rock 64 running solid, it has been running really, really solid.
I forget if I started my Rock 64. I think I was running Armbian on my Rock 64 originally.
Can't remember if I loaded that.
Yeah, I think I originally had DietPy issues. And again, don't take any of this to the bank. I'm doing it from a fuzzy recollection, and I've had a number of operating systems on these devices. So I'm pretty sure the early DietPy, earlier this year wasn't so good. Hey, I got a question. Did we do a prediction show?
Nope.
Last year?
Honestly, I think we might have, now that you said that.
Because I'm wondering, are we going to be doing another show this year?
We can. I'll say I'm pretty sure if we did do predictions, mine were like unbelievably non-spectacular safe. Like, arm's going to get better and it's going to suffer. But yeah, I will say the Nextcloud I got running on the Rock 64 now is unbelievably stable, clean, nice. I want to say it was ownyourbits.com, which is like the official Nextcloud Pi, which technically changed their name to Nextcloud Plus, but yet in their folder tree, when you go to their site, it's still Nextcloud Pi. And they literally did a build on like December 2nd. And I found it on like December 4th, and I downloaded it and burned it. As soon as I burned it and booted it, it's been running fine ever since. I've done updates. I've done SSH into it. I've done upgrades. I've done hard reboots where I literally just pull the power plug, and I just put it right back in, and it boots up just fine. So I'm going to end up converting that, getting rid of my own cloud server, which I will say I'll have a moment of silence because of the Banana Pi Pro has been fantastic. But I need Nextcloud now. This looks like it's going to be a solid performing device for at least a year is the goal.
All right. So I haven't done, actually, I think I've installed Nextcloud. I just haven't used it or set it up. I installed it at home on my XU4. I don't know if I installed it here. And I was transferring video from my phone to my computer to edit and then back to my phone. And I was doing it by USB, and I'm like, or is doing it through Google Drive. Like, dude, just set up Nextcloud. Just set up Nextcloud.
Well, and I'll say, even though I address my own cloud through noip.org.
You just said own cloud.
Yeah. Even though I access my own cloud through the noip DNS, which technically means it's taking a longer route than if I just address it via the internal IP address, I'm still seeing unbelievably good speeds on it.
Oh, wow.
And that's on the Banana Pi Pro. So I do expect when I replace it with the next cloud, I'm going to get much better performance than I do with my in-sync client going to my Google Drive. And I will say the only pain in the butt part is going to be mirroring the current users from OwnCloud to the next cloud and migrating the data over. Because I literally now have, I want to say, about 12 or 13 users on my OwnCloud. So I have to pull them all over. And I'll say, Rich, and anybody else out there who's been a longtime listener, if you want to try a federated Nextcloud instance, just let me know. It's where we can get larger drives connected to them and we can back up each other's stuff offsite. I do believe there is a way you can have it encrypted, but I'm not positive on that yet. But I do like the idea of the federation, and there is some sort of built-in chat, and there is a built-in XMPP client, and there is a built-in multi-user video chat client. I really am eager to play with all them. It's just a question of time.
Okay, well, I'll probably get my stuff set up and running. The other, we'll talk Docker in a second. Google Plus, is it Google Plus? Google Hangouts is going away. Is it Hangouts like we're using right now is going to go away?
Yes and no. It's really not going away. What they're doing is they're going to migrate users of Hangout to, rewind. Right now, there are 7 different messaging services offered by Google. They're going to reduce them down to 5. So they're going to migrate Hangouts chat from a internal only tool for the paid people who use Google services. They're going to migrate that to being a public free accessible client, and they're going to get rid of the normal Hangouts and push people to the Hangouts chat. We do expect to have the exact same feature set. It's just going to be in a different interface.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because I was wondering, I'm like, hey, are we not going to be able to do this in X months?
Well, and I tell you, Jitsi, J-I-T-S-I, and they have a WebRTC service, Meet, M-E-E-T, not M-E-A-T, M-E-E-T dot Jitsi.com, and it works really good until you have multiple people connected and you want to do like an hour-long show. Inevitably, if you have like 3 or more people on within the first 10 minutes, one of those connections will just completely die and stop working. And then like 10 minutes later, another one will. So you'll never be able to get through an hour show unless they do some serious fixing on their side.
Yeah, that sounds like a reasonably significant issue.
Well, if you only do, 5-minute plus video chats, you would never know. And it would just appear like this thing's fantastic. But when you want to do hour long shows, it becomes a little bit painful. But I digress.
So Docker, I actually got Docker running. I did it on different devices, and one of them was the Rockchip 64. So I was able to do that by checking the box on DietPi and getting it to install. I also installed it on my HC1, but I haven't even tested or used it yet. So you gotta look around, and there's some good Docker images out there. There's some bad Docker images. In the 3D printing world, it would be analogous to Thingiverse. You're not sure how good anything is that you're getting.
Well, I'll say this. With Thingiverse, my golden rule is I go to the webpage, and if they only have the rendered images, I never download the STL. With the Docker thing, I can't tell what looks good or not. And I will say, every web UI I've found for Docker sucks. They're not good. There's no customizations you can do. There's no tweaking you can do. If you want to download an image and boot it, it's fine. But if you want to do any customizations to that image whatsoever, like change the ports, change the IP, change anything, nothing. You can't do anything. So if anybody out there knows of an advanced web UI into the Docker containers management system that's free, let me know, because I couldn't find one.
Okay, so the way I kind of groom what I'm going to install by Docker is if it has, like, if this is how you install it, this is how you run it, this is the ports you connect to. If it has all of that filled out, I'm real sure I got something that's going to work.
Well, I know, but hypothetically, what if I want to run on the same piece of hardware three different things, and by default, all three want to use the same port? Then it, well, then
in your startup script, you can change the port.
Well, that's the thing. There's no web UI I've seen where you can change that.
Right, but you do. I mean, Docker is pretty much mostly command line.
Oh, I know. But if I can do it from a web UI on my phone nonchalantly, it's much more appreciative.
Oh, for sure.
So which web UI did you settle on?
Jeez, now you ask. It's been like 10 days since I've been home, so I can't even look.
Well, you brought it up, not me.
Yeah.
Because I settled on Shipyard, I want to say, was the one that I settled on. And there were certain things that it did I thought really, really good. But again, it was, to me, it was like a third grader walking into a middle school. It kind of looked like it wasn't really supposed to be there. It looked a little bit out of place.
Yeah, okay. It wasn't Shipyard, it was something else, but it didn't seem great. And I'm container curious for a couple of reasons. Realistically, what I've been looking for, which VMware hasn't talked about recently, is just plain ESXi on ARM, because I have, multi-gigabyte devices that I could run, many instances of Raspberry Pi, so I could have a host and run many guest OSs on it. But Docker kind of fills that need also. Along with work, we're going to be looking to do VMware with Pivotal Containers. They call it PKI. So having a little bit of Docker experience is a good thing for me.
Oh, yeah. I'll say, when I think of Docker and I think of VMware, I picture everyone should be able to relate to this. When you're playing a YouTube video, there's the white line and there's the red line. And the red line is always chasing the white line. And your goal as a user is you hope it never catches it. You want the white line to always be a little bit further ahead. That's why you don't have to wait for buffering. You don't have to wait for loading or anything. VMware is like that white line and it's looking in its rearview mirror, and Docker is gaining on it in weird ways. I mean, I'm not trying to say in a year, no one's going to need VMware. VMware is always going to have a place in the infrastructure for like 3+ years, no matter what. But Docker is maturing at an alarming rate. It has a long way to go to catch up to VMware, but VMware knows it needs to stay on point, on game, or else it's going to lose market share. And right now, it is worth insane money.
So Pivotal used to be owned by VMware, and they spun it off, which I don't understand why. But Pivotal does crazy good stuff.
I know, I've heard of them before, haven't I?
Dan Fry, I don't know if he works for them now or used to work for them.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Gotcha. Well, were there any other links in the notes that caught your attention?
I'd have to read the notes.
Okay, well, I'll say, while you're looking, I'll just say this out loud. There was a horrible, if there's any piece of software we as end users, we do not want a vulnerability in, it's going to be SQLite. There is no more installed piece of software in the history of the world than SQLite, okay? And there was a remote code execution found in the last week. The fortunate part, not the misfortunate part, but the fortunate part is, so if you have an SQLite instance on your computer, which I almost guarantee you do, but you don't know it, the interface has to be available through that application. The example is Chromium. Chromium has SQLite embedded in it to do some sort of management. And there was a opening from a web page to that SQL instance, and it was exploitable, and they did fix it really quick because it's Chromium. But SQLite, I will say this, don't go crazy searching your computer for SQLite. Don't go crazy looking for stuff. Wait, give it like a week. Let other things get updates. Let all your updates come in. And then if you want in a, like 2 weeks from now, do a search on your server or on your desktop or on your laptop for SQLi and just that character string and see if you have any instances of SQLite. And if you do, then you might want to do a little bit of research and see if whatever application that that folder is in, is there an update for it?
Okie doke. I'm a sucker for Rock 3399 stories. So what line was that? That was line 791. So build root for NanoPy Neo 4 RK3399 SBC. So let's see. They're so far featuring a hexa-core processor into, it says $45, then it says 60 by 45. Okay, that's this dimension. So it's $45. What's the specs on this before we get into the story?
Well, this isn't a board. That's the thing. This is not a piece of hardware. What this is, the only example I have is on the Android ecosystem, like 8 years ago, there was a thing called Kitchen. And what Kitchen was, it was a place where you could launch a tool and you could design and build custom versions of Android for your hardware. What this enables you to do is it enables you to download on an x86 device to build your own custom version of Linux that's specifically geared for the 3399 board. I will say I did not have great success with this. This was how supposedly you could get the NanoPy Neo 4 Linux running stable. Because right now, as of right now, on December, whatever the hell it is, there is no stable, clean running RK3399 Linux operating system that has graphics enabled on it. Right now, everything that's running stable in Linux on the 3399 is a headless type operating system or it's Android.
Oh.
So yeah, so that sucks. This is somebody's attempt to try to at least give you a stable Linux operating system on the 3399, but it's specifically geared towards that NanoPy Neo 4 board. Because trust me, when I saw this, I was giddy until I realized it's not for every 3399 chip.
Gotcha. So I think we've talked about the NanoPy Neo before, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is the one I believe that has the heatsink on it that is literally as big as the board itself.
Okay, I'm looking at the specs on it. So it's got a USB Type-C for power and data. So you'd have to get like a Y cable for that if you want to power it and use the data. It says 1 gig of RAM, so that's kind of a bummer.
It is, but I will say if you could get a solid Linux running on it, I think you would see better results than you would think because the chip itself is not bad. It's just with the 1 gig of RAM, you would have that normal click lag where you would click something and you would have to wait at least 3 seconds or something for it to pop up. But then once it would pop up, it would probably run decent.
Oh yeah. And this has this big honking piece of aluminum that looks like a 3-year-old milled it.
Oh yeah. But I'm sorry. Part of me almost likes that, and I don't know why, because it looks ridiculous.
Yeah, so 1 gig of RAM, look, if you're looking for a device like that, fine, but I kind of like to buy big as far as RAM goes, especially if it's soldered on, because then if I want to do something in the future with it, I have that capability.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a question of what's your environment, what's your plan. Some people want to piecemeal out and literally put single instances of things on single pieces of hardware and like scatter them about your house, your resident, your ecosystem. For those kind of people, you definitely want lower end, more affordable, cheaper boards. Like with you, I would much rather be able to have a competent board where I can put 2 or 3 services on it and still have it run perfectly smooth.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I'm either end of the spectrum on this. That's why I have like 7 Raspberry Pi 0Ws. Because if I want to set up a pool controller, you know, a swimming pool, heat pump controller, whatever, I'll throw a Raspberry Pi 0 in there and, you know, like a relay deck or solid state relay deck and have it control all of those devices.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I'll say, here's the thing. I like Raspberry Pi's organization. I don't like the fact that their GPUs are closed. I don't like the fact that they come out with new hardware that completely sucks and it's pointless. But the Raspberry Pi W, the thing I don't like about it is they don't make enough of the damn things. I would like to be able to just like walk up into like Lowe's or, you know, some normal place, Best Buy, and right by the cash register, they have a bucket of them, of like 300 of them. And that, oh, yeah, I could use a couple Pi Zeros and just pick up, you know, three or four anytime that I need them. But instead, they seem to be heavily rationed out and hard to get a hold of.
And I was flipping out. I think I spent about 5 to 7 hours looking for those 7 Raspberry Pi Zero Ws that I'd picked up in Troy, Michigan. And I had a Canon camera bag, and they're in the side pouch, which I now use as my flight bag. And I finally figured out, I'm like, if I haven't found them by now, they got to be in some sort of container that I didn't look through, that I just brought back. I'm like, yep, there it was. So I had a use for a Pi Zero W and, you know, some app I was having running. And I'm like, I don't need a Raspberry Pi 3. I can use that Pi 3 for something else. It was overkill for that. But if I throw it on the Pi W, I can, you know, free up an Ethernet port. I can connect, you know, wirelessly. It's not data intensive. Basically, I've got a home automation controller, the Home Assistant, and I'm just running a beta version. So if I totally blow it on the beta, which I'm running on the Raspberry Pi Zero now, who cares? It's not breaking any of my current home automation that's going on.
Gotcha.
So what do you see that's an interesting and fun story here?
I mean, there was, I believe, yeah, you bookmarked the easy way, in air quotes, how to do Docker on the Raspberry Pi line 784, it looks like. That one will be in the notes. I will say this. If I could have gotten Nextcloud with the NCC admin console on it running easily in Docker, and to where when it rebooted, it would have the same state without me having to learn a whole bunch of stuff, I would have kept running Docker. But because I found that Own Your Bits Nextcloud Pi instance specifically built for the Rock 64, I went with that one instead. Or otherwise, I would have forced myself to stay on Docker, learn more about Docker. And I will say this, I hate Docker because I don't have a genuine need for it. Once I have a genuine need for it, I think I'm going to like it, respect it, learn it, you know, kind of thing, and like really learn why it's better. But for right now, it's not like a driving focus on what I'm doing. I will say, if you're a Windows admin out there, Server 2019 is coming out next year for Windows, and they already announced it's going to have built-in Docker containers.
Oh.
So if you're a Windows admin, you're going to have a choice. Learn Docker, learn containers, or get left behind.
That is a big shot across the VMware bow.
Well, Microsoft has been really upset at the fact that more people did not adopt their Hyper-V setup, their approach with their PowerShell interface to it, which really wasn't a good interface to it. So they're literally, I think, just reaching for some kind of popularity. There's little doubt in my mind, if they do implement Docker containers in a scriptable, repeatable kind of way, how it is on BSD, how it is on Linux, if they are able to pull that off, my logic is they are going to completely own their corner of the market in less than 3 years. And then VMware will still be a valuable tool. It will just be a different tool for a different like task.
So what one of my coworkers talks about is the VMware hypervisor. It's not really that it's so good, it is, but it's that they patented everything that prevents anybody else from building something as good.
Well, and they always add on to it. They always have more things. It seems like every 6-8 months, they always add features to it, which don't really seem to get popular for like a year, but then all of a sudden people realize, oh, there's more stuff I can do in here. Oh, there's more stuff I can do there. And I will say Microsoft hurt VMware big time. I want to say 2 or 3 years ago, they changed their licensing scheme to where when you wanted to switch to a virtual license, it was all of a sudden almost 3 times the price of your standard physical hardware installation license.
Yeah, there's there have been shots across both bows, and VMware has all but abandoned Microsoft as a base operating system, and they call it appliances, but realistically, they're running on top of SUSE Linux.
Yep. And here's the thing. They don't need anything more. What they need is simple, basic, easy-to-secure operating systems that run lean. They don't need Windows.
Correct.
Okay, Rich, were there any more notes or newsworthy things that you can think of? And I'll say this. I think Brian broke his routine because we have a if this, then that routine that's linked to Gitpocket. And everywhere I look now in the notes, I see Brian's name. That means he bookmarked something. I see a date time next to it, so I see when he did something. But then there's no description from the web page. There's no title of the web page, and there's no URL, like line 773.
So what is line 790? I'm a sucker for Intel. Cromwell's 3.5-inch LS37L SBC showcases Intel's 8th-gen core CPUs with triple displays up to 16 gigs of DDR4, 2 gigabit Ethernet, and gigabyte Ethernet, and 2 SATA, 4 USB 3.1. That's a big deal.
Yeah, this was a very compact board, is what I'm going to say. It is literally like a full-fledged ATX motherboard with all the bells and all the whistles in a smaller form factor. The things that I liked was 4 USB 3.0 and the fact that it had three displays off of it. I'm pretty sure this was one of the ones where I couldn't find a price to it, but I was looking at this hoping it would confirm that I didn't get completely ripped off when I got the Odroid. But here's the thing. You're right. I'm going to say it now, Rich, even though it's 20 minutes later, whatever. You're right. If I was truly frugal, if I was truly cheap, if I was truly economical and efficient, I would have just got an Intel NUC, broke the case open, put RAM in it. Part of me wants to go out of my way to support Odroid as a company. I think they're one of the few companies out there putting out what seems to me, it seems to be higher end hardware, but actually having pretty solid operating systems along with it. So I'm okay, I'll say, with donating them some money.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah. And this is for USB 3.1, and it's the USB 3.1 that allows you to hang a display off it.
That's nice. And it looks like it also has, it is 146 millimeters by 101 for the Odroid H2, I believe, is 110 by 110. So it's a similar form factor.
This also has HDMI DisplayPort. So don't know if the hardware can do it, but in theory, you could have 6 monitors hug off this.
Ooh, wow, that's beefy. Yeah, and I keep thinking I read this wrong. Okay, now this board we're looking at right now has mSATA support via mini PCIe, which I believe is the older, slower standard, and NVMe is the newer standard. And I believe while this board looks like it only supports the older version, it looks like the H2, I believe, only supports the newer, faster version.
Oh, okay. You know, I totally forgot something here because I haven't been home in 10 days. The Rock Pro 64, the Pine, has a PCIe slot. It's the, what is it called? Express? PCIe Express?
Yeah, it's a PCIe Express, but it's also open-ended.
So I had 2 USB 3 boards. One was like an 8-port board, and I think the other was a 6-port board. I was able to plug one of those in and plug things into it, and I had a couple of like USB 3 to gig Ethernet dongles, so I was able to plug them in and get them working.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't have really any boards. I don't have any boards that I know of that could even begin to fit in there. I really do like the idea of having the port there ready to roll, but I don't have anything yet to put in. I will say the only news I have in regards to this, is listener Lyle, really nice guy, long time Podnut supporter. He did send me one of these, which is the USB EMMC writing dongle.
Oh, cool.
Which is USB 3. So
nice.
I don't know about you, but when I use Etcher to write an SD card image to an EMMC, it sometimes
a cup of coffee.
Yeah, it literally sometimes takes 3 minutes or more. With this thing, it literally is like 30 seconds and bang, it's burnt on there. This is well worth the money. And I want to say it was only like $7. So I do thank you, Lyle. This thing's awesome. I'm an idiot for forever buying the other one.
And I got a bunch of stuff I got on Amazon. I got to do tech reviews and videos on. One of them was a device. It's you can plug an SD micro SD card into it. One end is USB-C. The other end is USB, and you can actually fold it up, and it'll be micro-B. So it plugs into sync everything. I could plug into my phone and read a chip. And actually, that's what I did. So when I went from like 64 gig micro SD card to 128, I plugged that into my phone, plugged the new card in, just copied everything over.
Very nice.
But so going back to daughter boards on the Rock Pro 64, the first USB card that I dropped in there, you know, I ran through my box and I bought a card that was full height and didn't fit in this one computer. Then I had to buy like a shorter card that fit in the computer. Well, the first card didn't work because I guess the drivers for the chipset weren't in the operating system. And I just didn't have a whole lot of time and I just wanted to see, hey, okay, next card, does it work? And sure the heck enough, it did, which is cool because you could... how many USB 3 ports are on the Rock Pro 64?
I always want to say one, but you said two.
No, the on the Rock Chip 64, there's two, I think. Is there two on that?
Well, on the Rock Pro, there's only one USB 3 and then one Type-C.
Okay, and so that's why I was like, maybe USB ports. And so... yeah, there's cards and chipsets, and if I'm diligent, I'll have to get that information out there on which board it was that I dropped in that worked with it.
Gotcha. And on the Rock 64, again, it's only one.
It is one.
USB 3, which I will say, I'm not going to lie, I would like more, but I'm not going to go crazy that I don't have it.
Okay, so there's another dongle I got on Amazon, and it worked with Armbian. I don't believe it worked with DietPi. But the dongle had three USB 3 ports on it and gig Ethernet.
Wow.
And I plugged that in and had it running on my Rock Chip 64.
Very cool.
The short is if you're looking at a board and it doesn't have all of the ports you want, there may be other devices that plug into it that'll give you what you want.
Gotcha. Yeah. And that's the thing about the Rock Pro 64 that is trying to set it apart is it has a lot more different IO ports than your normal mini computer. It's a question of, can you find use cases for them? And is it beneficial to have those ports? There is still no good graphical operating system on it. There are many people out there saying you run it as a headless server and you can get a lot of good uses out of it. I don't have that set up yet. I'm not sure if I will have it set up as a headless server. I'm tempted to do it as like a Plex server, but I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, most of my SBCs I run headless. Almost no use case that I have or do that I use them with a head.
Well, you know what else is good headless, right?
The Horseman.
Sure, yeah. Line 785 in the notes. We as a civilization just landed a rover over on Mars, the InSight rover. But what is less known is that there are also two cube satellites, aka cube satellites, about the size of a box of cereal is what they keep saying, that have mini computers in them that are running embedded Linux. This is the kind of thing where it gives me hope as a Linux user that there is some kind of hope where when I retire from my 9-to-5, I might actually be able to contribute code to, I might be able to like contribute whatever to somebody developing things to help explore our galaxy, our solar system, our universe. I thought this was really cool. Maybe I'm too much of a nerd, but I thought it was awesome.
So, yeah, right now, prior to this insertion in the orbit, it was kind of cool how they did it. And I hate to say I haven't read about this recently, so I only have a recollection of it. But they split the CubeSats off before the orbiter landed, or the lander, I should say, landed. And I'm not sure how they're doing the orbits, but prior to this happening, the ground devices, whatever probes were on the ground, were communicating through the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, and that would relay back to Earth. Which, in my mind, it's kind of cool that we have, communication satellites orbiting other planets.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing where then they can make this specialized hardware so it can be really efficient and good at what it's doing, and it doesn't have to worry about taking any kind of like soil samples or wind detection or anything. They can just focus this hardware on just one thing, catching the signals and relaying them back to Earth and, forth.
So there are two things about Mars. On the 100th anniversary of flight, NASA did a talk, or prior to the 100th anniversary of flight, I was at Oshkosh, and NASA did a talk about flying a powered airplane of sorts, basically drone, or actually has to be autonomous, because it's a 15-minute delay to Mars, an autonomous drone in the atmosphere of Mars. But it was going to be an exceptionally short period of time. It was either going to have inflatable or fold-out wings. Basically, the project never got commissioned. My other gripe about landing on foreign bodies and, the moon, asteroids, Mars, is fine. You may have that high-dollar rover that has everything on it. Land it. Great. But more in the vein of CubeSats going out and around, land a dozen other devices that just have, propeller blades on them. And they would basically spin and land and do like a bump, and maybe 50% of them died. Something like a Raspberry Pi 3, Raspberry Pi Zero analog. Of course, it would have to be hardened for radiation and all of that type of stuff. But if you could just land a dozen small devices that do, burst communication when the CubeSat flies overhead, and collect data. Maybe one will hit frozen ice. Maybe one will hit, where there's a bunch of fungus growing. If you did just super simple devices, low cost of devices, and expect, a 50% infant mortality on them, I think there's a large reward for your investment on projects like that.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree. I'm pretty sure when they plan on launching things toward Jupiter moons, I can't remember the names of them. I want to say it was by 2028. Their goal was not to send just one thing, but they wanted to send a couple of them. One of them being a device that can actually submerge into the ice, past the ice into what they believe is a liquid ocean.
So is that Io, where they believe it's methane ice and methane liquid underneath the ice?
It might be Io. I honestly can't remember, but I know that they said there was two moons that they looked very interesting at, and their goal is to send multiple things at the same time. They wanted, from the way I heard it, they wanted to send like six things, three at each of the moons, and they each have like their own individual task to do.
See, that I think is great. Whether the surface has winds and you put something with like a parachute on it that gets dragged across the surface for a while, that would be cool. If you come up with a bunch of different methodologies and devices and count on, 30 or 50% infant mortality, but you may get some good data back at a very reasonable cost.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. The cost of these things are pennies compared to what we had just, 10 years ago. And they still do expect, even just going to Mars, which is close, in all relation is close. They've only had, I want to say, like a 46% success rate on things successfully landing on the actual planet.
Well, I remember two recent failures. There was the Mars Polar Lander, and it failed because the guy that something in the landing sequence did an equals to in a real-time operating system. You never do an equals to. You always do equals or greater or equals or less than, because you may miss the actual value. Like something was supposed to happen at an altitude above ground level and fire, and instead it just made a hole.
Right.
The other Mars probe that was supposed to insert into the atmosphere, we're working with European Space Agency, and they gave us the value for the correction for the orbital insertion in metric.
Right.
And we didn't think it was metric.
Right. Genius.
And I will tell you something that is, I graduated high school in 1983, and I forget when I took physics, but I remember the problem. There was a man standing in an elevator with a 19 Newton bass on the end of a string. And I said to myself before he finished the problem, remember to add the mass of the bass. Otherwise, you'll get the question wrong. You'll do the acceleration formula. And back then, if we didn't include the units, even though you got the right numerical value for the answer, you got the question wrong. And these guys should have went to my class.
Very cool, Rich. Were there any other mini PC type things you wanted to bring up?
No, I'm just still working away on projects at home. I want to do a garage door opener. I want to do a pool controller, and those would be based on Pi Zeros. And the Pi Zero I put in the garage, I want to put a camera on so I can see if there's a vehicle occupied in the garage. I do have cameras around the house, and I'm still working on getting, I may have to switch my security recorder, they call it an NVR network video recorder, for one that gives me streams out, because I want to do person recognition. In other words, there's motion, is it a person? Yes. And then facial recognition, that's a face, yes. And then facial identification, it's like, hey, it's somebody that should be around the house, and alert me if it isn't. So I'm still working down those avenues.
Gotcha. I will say I'm going to make it a point to try to do one more show this year, and that show will have predictions on it. The show might happen right after the first of the year, but we can definitely do predictions. And I'll try to see if I can find the show from last year. If I do, I'll share it with you, Rich, and we can listen to it and see how off our predictions were. And if you, the listener, if you're on our Mattermost server, you can just drop me a line there. Tell me what your predictions are. If you're on our Discord server, drop me a line. Tell me what they are there. If you're on Google Plus, drop them there. If you're on any other system, don't drop me a line because I won't answer. Google Plus is dying in April. I will say if I move to another system, it is a system where I have root. Because if I don't have root, that means I have no control over it. I have no say over it. And whenever somebody else wants to kill that service, they will, and I'll have nothing to say about it. So I will not be on Facebook. I will not be on Twitter. I will not be on MeWe. I will not be on Mastodon. I will not be on Instagram. I will not be on any of those services where I do not have root. Call me old. Call me a curmudgeon. Call me whatever. Just don't call me late for dinner.
Somebody asked me about, hey, how are you doing with your backup solution? And right now I'm only running Time Capsule. My PCs, which I don't have any, my wife has one, and Linux devices, I'm not backing up. And still Duplicati seems to be the best thing out there. It, again, you own it. It's open source. You have a root. I'm kind of ticked off because, again, the root ownership issue, flyingrich.com, I have a script that loads content from my social media there. And with Google Plus going away, because Google Plus is one of the content feeds, it kind of throws a monkey wrench in how I get content onto my flyingrich.com page, which I'm exploring different avenues of doing that, but it's still a pain in the butt.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, there is no perfect answer. To expect a perfect answer is failure, but I will be actively looking for a good enough answer. Did you take a look at the Tim Berners-Lee solid thing yet?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Nobody does. And the people who look at it can't explain it to me. I'll have a link to the notes. Tim Berners-Lee is getting behind this thing called Solid. I logged into the demo and I have no idea what the hell is going on or what the hell I'm supposed to do in there. But it sounded like it was a self-hosted, personal, private cloud type solution, like your own, I don't want to say Facebook, but your own media hub.
Huh. Yeah, but again, if you know, you talk about things like how are they making money on it? I'm assuming there's some sort of monthly fee.
There was two choices with it. You could pay them to host a instant of it, or you could have your own hosted instant of it, or you could download the operating system yourself and just host it on your own hardware. So with that said, I don't know what their actual plan is. And again, I logged into the interface and I still have no idea what the hell it's supposed to be. It's literally filled with like tech media jargon is what I want to say.
But then, you know, it's awesome and you got to invest.
Well, I mean, part of me believes Tim Berners-Lee ain't no dummy. He's going to put his name behind something that he can see is going to develop.
Are you saying it'll be better than WazU?
I don't know, but it has a good name. It's solid.
Yeah, apparently WazU had a whole bunch of issues, and I feel bad for Steve Wozniak.
I have a hard time feeling sorry for millionaires, just saying. Mainly because I'm not one. All right, Rich, what's the easiest way for people to catch up with you?
As I've only pimped like four times in this episode, flyingrich.com, there's a contact page, and flyingrich.com is basically my aggregation of all of my social media. So anything I've done, said on the net, world wide web, that I want people to see is there.
Very cool, very cool. I want to thank you for coming out, Rich. I want to hope Brian is okay. He definitely had some stress in his life, and this is the stressful time of year, I will say. I want to thank everyone for downloading. Thank everyone for their support. Do not forget, you can send us a voicemail at 7076podnut. That still works. The email, for some reason, still will not forward from minipcshow@podnuts.com to anything else, and I have no idea why. So I'm going to keep working on that. Hopefully I'll get it working soon, and we will talk to everyone again real soon.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network, and we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.